Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or reach through restaurantguysradio.com.
And you can also find our shows on the web, on iTunes. If you have an iPod, you can podcast us right onto your little device there. I'm not exactly sure how you do it, but I know it can be done.
We're 40 and we don't have iPods.
Because we got hundreds of people doing it a day, so I don't know how they do it, but that's not, I got people do that for me, I guess. We spent a couple of days talking about sustainable agriculture on the production side, and now it's time to go all the way over to the other side and talk about how things get to your table. We have with us a friend of ours who is one of the most prominent sommeliers in the country. Roger de Gorn is a wine director, master sommelier, and the maitre d' at Chanterelle Restaurant in Manhattan, one of our favorite restaurants. He's won the Best Sommelier in New York by Chefs in America in 91, the Outstanding Wine Service Award from the James Beard Foundation in 96. He's been named Wine and Spirits Professional of the Year by Santé Magazine, and he is an adjunct professor of wine education at the New York Technical College, CUNY. Hi, Roger.
Hi, how you doing?
Good morning, Roger. How are you today?
Good, good.
Yeah, what I left out is that you also are the nicest sommelier in the world.
We've just
given you that award. I would say, Roger, you are the antithesis of the haughty sommelier stereotype of days gone by. And I would say that you were that way before it was fashionable to be that way. Now, you're a master sommelier. How many master sommeliers are there in the country?
Boy, our numbers have grown. We're up to 70 now.
All the way up to 70,
yeah,
are you?
Yeah, way back when I passed my exam, I was number 14.
Wow. So we're talking about a level of professionalism that you've achieved in the wine industry in advance of, I think, increasing professionalism in our industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what is fascinating to me and what's really enheartening to Mark and to me is how there really, we believe there's an increasing level of professionalism overall among people in this industry. Do you find that to be the case?
Yes, I think there's a lot more opportunity to learn more about wine. Also, a little more challenging with the major publications that are out. The consumer is a lot more wine knowledgeable, and it's reached a broader range of consumers.
Mm. Yeah,
I don't find that as a greater challenge. I find that as some, you know, welcome introduction for some of these people. They seem to be embracing us more and embracing that knowledge more.
Well, definitely, it gives us an opportunity to have a broader conversation with our customers, and at the same time, able to taste a wider range of great wine.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that's interesting is that we are fortunate, we're blessed where we're broadcasting from. If you're listening in the listening area as opposed to the podcasting area, you could be anywhere. But in the greater New York wine market, it's probably the greatest wine market the world's ever known as far as what's available here. Would you agree with that, Roger?
Well, yeah, very much so, especially New York market, for simple reasons that other parts of the world, they specialized in their own wines. In New York, we get wines from all over,
right.
Not just California, not just from France, really, right. But everything comes to New York eventually.
One of the things Francis and I like to say is, if you live in Burgundy, yes, you get to try more Burgundy than anywhere else in the world.
True.
But the secondary market for Burgundy isn't Bordeaux. It's New York City.
That's for sure. So, or maybe Paris.
Well, no, okay. Exactly.
All right, fair enough.
But in New York, you can get the best of everything, which is really great. I find that being in this business around the New York market, we need to travel less because if people go anywhere outside their home region, they'll come to internationally, they'll come to New York. Do you find that the case?
Very much so.
Now,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, we were talking more about professionalism in the wine industry. And one of the things, because we've been out in the provinces most of our careers in Jersey, and we've done some consulting and the like in Manhattan. And one of the distinctions that was always drawn when we started in this business, you know, 18 years ago, was that if you were in Manhattan, you could find people who did this as a career and who did it professionally. But if you were outside of a major metropolitan center, you were always, college students was the best you could do and what you were confined to. And while college students still, in both in and out of Manhattan, play an important role in our industry, I find that it's more acceptable socially to pursue a career as you have and as we have in the restaurant industry and have the respect of a true professional. Yep. Do you find that's true across the country?
Well, very much, yes, especially in the last 10, 20 years. The industry, the hospitality industry, was basically a place that people fell into after attending school and moving on from one profession to another, and it was perhaps a standby profession while they were working on another. It's not like in Europe where some people would start training at the age of 14 or 16
right.
years
or,
old.
Or even younger than that.
That's right. That's right. And they cut their fingers many a times on knives just
right.
to
right.
learn the industry.
Yeah. In this country, we only do that if your father owns a diner.
That's right.
That's the only way it happens.
And there was always a dream that they'd move on.
Yeah, exactly. The hope was they wouldn't do it, exactly.
Yeah. But I think there's become a love of the industry in recent years. And it was interesting where my background, I'm French-born, my family used to always say that in the United States, people eat to live, whereas in France, they live to eat. But, you know, that philosophy seems to have been changing quite a bit in recent years in the United States, where the consumer now really is interested in food and fine dining and the wine accompaniment to go with it, to the point that even wine has become more the passion than food.
Yeah, you know, and the interesting thing is I think that a lot of people who get into the hospitality industry as a passion and as a vocation are the people who are drawn into it through the wine and the professionalism in wine. I'm amazed at how many, and very gratified at how many people have been able to work for us and have decided to either go on to their own and open a restaurant or go on to become a food critic, or the people who are with us, who are our long-term employees who've been with us for 5 and 7 years, who are considering making a career with us.
I mean, we have someone in your Master Sommelier program right now.
Oh, wonderful.
So, I mean, do you find that's changing in New York as well, that it's the wine people that are sort of driving this whole, you know, increasing professionalism and taking this as a vocation, not just a job as a bridge from one thing to another?
I don't know if it's the wine industry that's doing so. I do know that there are a number of wine classes around town that are training people to know more about wine and to be able to sell it better to the public, and also to develop people's tastes for wine, because you know, wine is it's not something you just taste and say, "Gee, I love this stuff." No, they sometimes you have to learn how to appreciate it and to be able to appreciate it with food and to learn the accompaniment. And because of this, I think the schools themselves are the driving factor developing young professionals in this industry.
Well, and I think that one of the things that's very important is there is a way for people now to pursue education process, and the two pinnacle degrees are the Master Sommelier degree, which you hold, or alternatively the Master of Wine degree. Mm-hmm. But there are several steps that people take along those routes and get certified, and I think that really fulfills something that Americans need, a sort of validation that I am a professional, I'm pursuing a career, I have an academic degree. And we're going to talk more about this, Roger, and I want to talk more about education of consumers and education of staff and the role that food and wine is playing. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or reach through restaurantguysradio.com.
We're here with Roger DeGorn. Roger DeGorn is the maitre d' and sommelier at Chanterelle Restaurant. He's also a master sommelier and has written extensively about wine. And we were talking earlier about putting wine and food together. And Roger, you talked earlier about being there to serve people and to fulfill their needs. But a lot of people seek out you in particular and seek out Chanterelle to sort of broaden their horizons.
Uh-huh.
And you've done some great stuff for me, and I've actually stolen a lot of stuff from you over the years. I hope
Wonderful.
You don't. I hope you don't mind. But when I remember when I went down the first time that you brought me over as part of it, I said, you know, Roger, we'll have four or five courses of food, and just pick beverages to go with it. And you brought over for one of the courses sake.
Yes.
And that was the first time. And now it's sort of you see this all over, but that was years ago. That was the first time that I had sake. In a Western European restaurant,
right,
an American
dining,
restaurant.
Right, American French style restaurant.
And how did that come about, and how has that take sort of worked its way into fine dining cuisine? And you're still known for being kind of an authority on sake.
Well, I was always interested in sake for quite some time, but what was available in the United States has been really pretty much low grade,
uh-huh.
Quality bulk sake.
And when did that change?
Well, it changed about 10 years ago. There were a few small importers that brought in the high-end sake, the small, what they call jizaki producers, and which specialized in junmais and junmaishu. So in other words, sake that's been handcrafted where the rice is milled down to below 70% its original size,
uh-huh.
close to the kernel where the starch is and what the flavor is. And sake made to a point where it doesn't taste like kerosene, but
right.
tastes like a very special beverage.
Right.
I prefer it like that, Roger.
Yeah, well, I think we all do.
Well, no, but you were blazing new trails then to take those sakes, not only learn about them, but then pair them with Western cuisine. Did you find that to be a challenge to put them together with Western cuisine?
Well, I didn't really find it a challenge. I had a lot of fun doing it, and I collaborated with David Waltock, our chef,
right.
chef owner of Chanterelle, and we've been having a lot of fun with it. And, you know, his cooking is classic French cuisine, but he has his own twist to it.
Right.
And sometimes Asian touches, but usually not. But we do taste the sakes, new sakes, and we taste it with food. And we do host sake producers in town, and we do sake dinners once a year. In fact, one's coming up on the 19th of September.
Actually, we'll put that up on our website if you want to go to the upcoming sake dinner at Chanterelle.
That would be great.
We'll stick that on the Restaurant Guys website at www.restaurantguysradio.com. And just so you know, that we're talking with Roger DeGorn of Chanterelle Restaurant, who's a master sommelier and a friend of ours. And we're going to link you to him on our site. You can check that out later on. But I'm sorry,
Wonderful.
You were talking about sake dinners, right?
Yeah, and they've been highly successful. It's interesting how curious Americans are when it comes to sake. They don't know enough about it,
mm-hmm.
and some enjoy sake. I have a lot of people that just do not like sake because they've just tasted the mediocre sake.
Sure,
right.
Sure. Well, it's just like saying you don't like wine when all you've had is, Opeachy jug wine.
Right, exactly. And but there are these great sakes that are really exciting and work well with food.
Do you find, is there the same variety in sake that there is in grape wine?
There are a number of different styles. There are different quality levels. There are different tastes, flavors that you get from different sake producers.
Mm-hmm.
There is variety. There's about 1,500 different sake producers
wow.
in Japan, each one of them making maybe up to 10, 12 different sakes at different quality levels.
Right.
There's variety, a lot of it.
You know, I think one of the things that's really very interesting is when you go to a restaurant, and one of the reasons that hopefully people trust us when they come to the restaurant, there's a great, I find anyway, that when people say, okay, Francis, okay, Mark, bring us, you know, 7 courses, have the chef cook for us, and you pick the wine for us, and we want to spend X. And by the way, if you're out there in listener land, if you're ever in a restaurant and you want to say, listen, I really wholeheartedly
right,
use
this is my budget.
I want to spend $50 on a bottle of wine. I want to spend $25 on a bottle of wine. I don't care what I spend on a bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm.
Say that. I don't think it's impolite to say that today. And you really put the sommelier in a very difficult position if he has to look at how expensive your watch is and take
sure.
a guess at what you need to spend.
The other thing that we do a lot. And, you know, sometimes you're with a set of guests or you're entertaining, and that's not something you want to be saying across the table. Point to a price on the wine list and say, you know, we're really looking for something like this. Do you have any recommendations? And that'll give us just a little cue that we need to point you in a direction.
Roger, do you have any suggestions for consumers that might ease their experiences when dealing with in these sorts of situations?
Well, the more information they impart to the sommelier, the easier it is for the sommelier to come up with a wide range of choices.
Mm-hmm.
I come up with the situation quite a bit, and I'm not sure what to recommend based on what they're looking at. But what it is that I like to have a list. My list is pretty wide range when it comes to price. If I really am not really unsure about how much I want to spend, I would suggest several, maybe one low-end, one high-end, and one midway.
Right in the middle.
And
yeah.
How do you feel, Roger, if someone consciously avoids saying the price and won't open the wine list and look at it so you can point at the price?
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that when they say, you know, when they say, Roger, we would like a really nice bottle of Burgundy. Just bring us something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now, they could be talking $40. They could be talking
$1,000. Well, you can't be talking about a really nice bottle of Burgundy for $40.
But we in the service industry have to go by their definition.
Correct.
But to divine what their definition is, how do you deal with such a situation, Roger?
Well, again, I will make several different suggestions.
Will you mention the price when you talk to them?
Generally not. I don't mention the price, but I will make certain suggestive points. Is it a very, very special occasion?
Right.
Is it you? I just hungry and just want to have a good mm-hmm. dinner. You know, little inflections gives me an indication.
The other thing I'll try and do is I'll try and ask someone what other kinds of wines they like. So you'll get a little bit of a feel for the types.
So Mark will be at the table and say, so are you thinking along the $2 Chuck range or something like a Dom Perignon?
Have you thought Domaine de la Romanée Conti?
I try to avoid those extremes.
Right, of course, of course.
Yeah. Because the thing is, if somebody wants to really spend big bucks on a wine, they don't necessarily need a sommelier for that. They can easily see that on the list and say, gee, that's what I want to spend and that's what I'm going to order. But if they're looking for something for a recommendation, and they tell me that, well, mine is really not an object, I may go higher, but I won't go, let's say, to the Dom Perignon range, but mm-hmm. I'll go somewhere perhaps a little less in that range. Or they say they're on a budget, well, then, you know, I'll make that consideration anywhere from $40 to $60 or $40 to $80,
yeah.
Depending. You know, depending on the situation, of course. Mm-hmm. Difficulty is that when you say that if they're wearing a Rolex or wearing a
Timex
special clothes, you can't tell that these days.
Right, it's true.
You know, people come in jeans and they're driving around in a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, well, we're talking with Roger DeGorn, who's a master sommelier, a dear friend of ours, the nicest sommelier in America, and we're talking about wines in general. We're going to talk about wine and cheese in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're here talking with Roger DeGorn, who's the wine director at Chanterelle Restaurant in Manhattan, a friend of ours, and also one of the early master sommeliers in the country and one of the most well-respected master sommeliers in the country. Hello again, Roger.
Hi. How you doing?
Roger, you said something before the break that really struck me, and it's just what I love about you. We said, we asked you, how do you divine what people are looking to spend in a bottle of wine, which I think consumers can sometimes find that to be an awkward moment, and then sommeliers, if consumers don't communicate it, can find it to be an awkward moment. And you said, you know, if you have a lot of money to spend on wine, finding a great bottle of wine is easy.
That's true. It's much easier.
But it's when you have a certain budget that you want to work in, but you want to have a nice time, that's when, you know, your job kicks in. And I'm going to craft for you a great evening and have a great bottle of wine that goes with it. Do you think that a sommelier has as much a responsibility or even more of a responsibility to find, you know, reasonable and inexpensive bottles of wine even that are great? And do you think that's harder to do?
Well, it's actually not harder to do. It's still a buyer's market. And the beauty of our profession is that we go out searching for wines all the time, and we're looking for new finds, something that's great, and something that sometimes we may want to enjoy at home ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we would recommend. And you know what it is? It isn't always trying to upsell to the most expensive wine in a restaurant that's good for the customer or for the restaurant. I find that sometimes a customer may want to spend $100 on a wine. They say, okay, find me something at about $100. And I would say, well, great, that's easy. I'll go and bring a bottle, maybe that's $70, $80, or sometimes even less, that I think would be appropriate with the meal.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they don't know the price, or when they find out the price, they're even more thrilled. And they'll either have a second bottle, or guess what? They'll come back and
friends for life.
And trust
sure.
my judgment next time around.
I think that a great sommelier should be equally excited to recommend you a $30 or $40 bottle of wine
Definitely.
As they are to recommend you a $200 or $300 bottle mm-hmm. of wine. You should be as jazzed about this wine for different reasons, but I have always felt that challenge me. Come to me and say, you know what? I'm looking for something a little bit different. I'm looking for something outside the beaten path. Now, don't come to me and say, I want a California Cabernet for $30. That's great, because I may not have something that's really special in that price range. But come to me and challenge me a little bit and say, you know what, I'm on a little bit of a budget today.
And I want a great red for $30, and I have a
exactly.
number.
And there are 50 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's interesting, I think, is with the sommelier, we're looking at what you're having for dinner, and we know the food, and we know mm-hmm. the wines in our cellar. And so to put those two things together is really part of our job. And Roger, I'd like for you to comment on for a moment about something that's sort of an interesting phenomenon that I find disturbing. I love when people come in and trust us
mm-hmm.
and say, can you put together something for me, or can you bring me something special for your seller? Unfortunately, after 13 years in business, we have a lot of people that do that for us, and I know that you have a lot of people that do it for you because I'm one of the people that do it to you. The role of scores in those major publications, which do a lot of really good things for educating consumers. But I get consumers often who come in and they want a 95-point wine, or they want a blockbuster wine, or they want a wine that has a certain number of points. And I think that at table, that's when that is least relevant. I mean, what do you find about customers who always want a big blockbuster wine, even if the food they're having doesn't really match that well with it?
I give it to them.
Of course, of course. But I mean, do you find that that's unfortunate, or do you find that you try and win people over to bring them in a direction that they may not initially be looking to go?
Well, I'm kind of happy to see these people sometimes too, because I know that they're interested in wine.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing their own homework,
right?
Which is good. But I remember one time being on a panel and with two other sommeliers, and Kevin Zraeli was the moderator, and he had asked about writing notations and scores of publications on the wine list next to the wines. And at the time I was working in a Chinese restaurant called Sai Yang, and the question was directed at me. I said, well, it doesn't work necessarily, because even though maybe Chateau Latour 1982 may have a 100-point score, I wouldn't give it 100 points with Chinese food.
Right. Exactly. And I think one of the other interesting things is there are so many young people entering our business that are so jazzed about wine and are putting a lot of knowledge in their head. And they may not be a master sommelier. They may not be very far even in their overall knowledge of wine. But there are many young sommeliers and wine merchants on the retail level who know everything about the wines that they carry. And that's why I suggest, you know, going to somebody like you, Roger, or hopefully people will do it to us as well. And why if I may know more about wine than the sommelier of this little restaurant that I go to, but if he's doing his job, I don't know more about the wines in his cellar than he does and how they go with
exactly.
the food that the restaurant, you know, that restaurant makes.
Yeah, especially if he's buying the wines, to match the food.
Yeah.
That is a major point. A lot of people do come in, and they're very, very knowledgeable about wines. They may certainly be more knowledgeable than I am about wines, and that's wonderful that I can have great conversations with mm-hmm. It's interactive. With many of these new young sommeliers, they're so energetic and so interested in wine. They're interested in serving the customer and helping the customer, and that's always beneficial for the customer.
Mm-hmm. You know, Roger, we would definitely be remiss if we did not talk about the cheese course at Chanterelle.
Huh.
It really, I mean, I think for Francis and me is what kind of drove us to our cheese course at Stage Left.
The year is 1994. I dine at Chanterelle. Meet you for the first time and you do the cheese course for
93
us?
93 it was, actually.
93? 94, we started the first cheese course in New Jersey of that caliber.
First real cheese course.
Not of your caliber, but of our caliber, and have brought it up over the years. Amazing stuff. You really blaze trails. Now, in Europe, that's sort of, you would expect to find a great cheese course at every meal. What role have cheese courses played at Chanterelle, and how have you seen it change over the years?
Well, I remember when cheese was basically unheard of in restaurants in Manhattan. And I remember years ago when cheese was part of every meal in any French restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But it became a health issue for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, well, no, cheese is bad for you. But the Waltocks, Karen and David, they've believed in serving cheese with the meal. And we've done it all the time. We just continue, and then it became fashionable again. So we haven't changed our course. We have a fromager that goes out and seeks out the best cheeses available, and he finds them. And he studies them, he researches them, and he explains it to the staff.
Obviously teaches your staff quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. And so every waiter is ready and knowledgeable about every cheese that's on the board.
And cheese is a lot like wine. It's almost as complex about wine. We're talking
with
Roger Degorn, who's a master sommelier and the sommelier maitre d' at Chanterelle Restaurant in Manhattan. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Roger Degorn, a master sommelier, and also the maitre d' at Chanterelle Restaurant. Roger, you know, we were talking about cheese just before the break, and you guys really blaze new trails in bringing cheese back to fashionability, and I think that movement has gone nationwide.
Yeah, before there was an artisanal, there was Chanterelle doing cheese.
And do you find that that the quality of cheese available in America is sort of, that's an exciting new area?
Well, especially American cheeses, there's quite a few more available, small producers, and making very good cheeses, but not just America. You can get cheese from all over now, and certainly Spanish cheeses are popular, English, Irish cheeses, Italian cheeses, and, of course, French cheeses. They're all available, and there are several different sources today.
And so when people say, well, why should I have cheese in a restaurant when I can just buy cheese and take it home? Your answer to them?
Well, oftentimes we're able to get better quality cheeses and a wider variety of cheeses.
Yep.
And I also
are not available to the public.
And my answer is do both.
But my point is, one of the things, the great things about the cheese course, it was really, I do buy cheese for home, but one I thought was great at Chanterelle was, you know, the cheeses are there, they're at room temperature, they're at the perfect level of ripeness.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't manage, you know, to have 12 cheeses at the perfect level of ripeness in your house and serve them at room temperature. It's just a very big deal. And to have somebody knowledgeable who knows about all those cheeses and how they go with beverages is really tremendous. So I want to thank you for blazing that trail in Manhattan.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure.
Thanks very much for being with us today, Roger.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for taking the time out of your schedule. We're going to put on our website the link to Chanterelle Restaurant and the links where you can find out more about Roger Degorn. And if you want to go get your master's sommelier degree, how to do that yourself.
Or if you want to go to Chanterelle, Roger will be on the floor in about 4 minutes.
Thanks again, Roger. Take care. He's great.
He is really great.
I think he is, by the way, the nicest sommelier in America.
Well, and what he represents is exactly what a sommelier should be. You shouldn't be intimidated by the sommelier in a restaurant. The sommelier is there to help you. The sommelier is there to guide you and give you suggestions on things that you might not have tasted and give you suggestions to match them with food that you haven't tasted yet to make your experience better. Never, never be intimidated by a sommelier.
And he also is there to make you, he knows a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, if you go and say, I want a bottle of Cabernet, he'll bring you a bottle of Cabernet. If you ask him a lot of questions, he has the answers to a lot of questions. But the most important thing is he makes you feel welcome. And that's what it's all about, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, he knows all the stories.
Well, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.